Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems instead of just defending positions. Well, here we are, the beginning of a new year and a new decade, and the people of America and the people of the world are ready for something new, a 2020 vision that not only takes our country back, but takes it forward. That's why I'm so pleased and honored to have as our guest today Marianne Williamson, author, teacher, and now political leader and presidential candidate. Yes, I was definitely interested and curious and supportive when she announced her presidential run, but to be totally honest, it wasn't until I saw and heard her at the second presidential debate when I realized the true significance of this candidacy. She spoke truth that was so far beyond the political cliches that kind of broke these new ideas through the soundless barrier that I went, oh my goodness, this is the platform for the future if we are to have a future. The applause she got at the debate was real, from people hungry for truth and also genuine transformational change, not just chump change. Marianne is willing to address the shadow by bringing the light of spiritual and historical perspective and to be a stand for the golden rule, overruling the rule of gold. As I see it, Marianne Williamson is a spokesperson for the politics and platform of our future. Welcome, Marianne.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for your generous words.
And before we get into the political aspect of it and the platform, something personal. What was it that sparked your desire to run for president, and what was it that allowed you to make your final decision to say yes?
Well, what sparked it was everything that you've been talking about since you've been on the air and everything that you do talk about in your work. I'm from the same tribe, as it were, attitudinally, philosophically, politically. So my desire, like yours and like millions of us, has been to use my skill set and my experience in whatever way might best help pave a way forward. In terms of the specific idea of running for president, that came upon me in a bit of a flash, but then it took another year to sort of suss out the idea and provide a sense of whether or not it was something I should actually do. Mm-hmm. But all signals seemed to be go, and so I went.
Wow. Well, you know, you've been a public persona for a long time, and of course, the level of scrutiny and criticism and all kinds of stuff, once you actually declare yourself as a candidate for president, that's something that I know you were partially prepared for, but were you really prepared for the whole of that? Did you, Hello?
Are you, am I not here?
You're
not
here? You're here. I just didn't hear you.
Okay. I said that there was no way to be prepared for the level of vilification and demonization and attacks that I have received. Scrutiny is not only fair but appropriate because you're running for president of the United States. So intellectually honest scrutiny, intellectually honest and ethical journalism, I think I was prepared for, but the complete mendacious creation of a false narrative about who I am, about what I've done for 35 years, and about what my candidacy stands for. No, I was not prepared and was not able to override. I mean, the idea of wacky crystal lady still hangs in the air. It's really been quite something.
Yes, and you know, now that you know your campaign, you've been excluded from the national debates, and you've persisted with your campaign on the ground. And when I saw you in San Francisco, one of the young reporters, you know, asked the ridiculous question, "Well, when are you going to quit, or how long are you going to stay in, and all of that stuff?" And you were very kind to her. How has it been since the summer, where you have, been with people doing your campaign, even though you haven't had as much of the national spotlight as you did at the beginning? How has it been for you, and what's given you the most encouragement at this point?
After the second debate, there was a lot of press about me, a lot of interest in my campaign. And 3 days later, you could feel when the kill order came down. There were forces who were aware that if I was in that third debate, the interest in the things I was saying would be unstoppable. So when all of that began, she's dangerous, she's crazy, she's anti-science, she's anti-medicine, she's a grifter. It did feel, and it does feel, almost like something out of the Middle Ages. She's a witch. I mean, it's practically their word. She's a witch. She's a witch. She's a witch. She's a witch. She's crazy. She's dangerous. You can't listen to her. And I thought to myself, I'm not someone who is going to walk away when something like that is happening. And I... It was constant, you know, it was ubiquitous. You couldn't turn on your computer, you couldn't turn on television. Someone wasn't, you know, very much presenting a false narrative of what I've done for the last 35 years and what my campaign stands for. So what I experienced then and what I experience now, and it's heartbreaking, is that there are two different political universes. There's one that is all of that, the campaign industrial complex, the political media industrial complex. It's billions of dollars. It's reality TV shows for the most part. And some journalists, by the way, have been very, very good to me, very fair. And then there are those who either didn't take classes in ethics and journalism or don't remember or aren't even journalists, but they have websites and they're after the click, right? So that's one world. But then there's another world. And the other world is called American democracy. And it's ideas, such as the ones I talk about. Ideas about children, ideas about peace, ideas about integrative health as part of our healthcare system, ideas about race, ideas about corporatocracy. This idea that she's a joke candidacy, my platform is the most serious out there, to be honest, in terms of some of the issues that are being discussed. So I have found that in talking to actual voters, there's resonance for these ideas. But the problem is that because of that false narrative, so many people who, and this, of course, was the intent. I mean, this was all very intentional on their part. And the intent was to make serious people think, well, you can't listen to her. You can't take her seriously. And so many people who might have otherwise come and heard me wouldn't even come hear me. There's a term, there's a phrase, contempt prior to investigation. So many people who think they're so intelligent and so intellectual, who have apparently no idea how much they've been bamboozled by these thought forms they can put in the press. You know, I read this quote, a lie has traveled halfway around the world before the truth has even put its pants on. So I have stayed in because I'm interested in something much more important than all of that. I'm interested in where our country is, and I'm interested in the things that you said, shining a light on what needs to be shown a light on, the idea that there are many shadows that we must look at, that America must look, take a look in the mirror. We have to recognize the places where we need to atone and make amends, where we have to realize we've regressed into a basically aristocratic situation, where we have to repudiate that. That there are millions of chronically traumatized children in this country. We have elementary school students on suicide watch. We have public schools with trauma rooms. We have 13 million hungry children. We have 100,000 homeless children. We have millions of children who have been diagnosed with severe PTSD. We have millions of children who have classrooms that don't even have the adequate school supplies to teach a child. And those kids can't learn to read by the age of 8, their chances of high school graduation are drastically decreased, and their chances of incarceration are drastically increased. These are the things that certain people don't want on the debate stage because there's no money to be made helping these children. These children are not old enough to vote, so they have no constituency. They're not old enough to work, so they have no financial leverage. And in most of the cases, their parents are poor, and so the system says they don't vote either. That's why I want a Department of Children and Youth. So why have I stayed in? Because I want to talk about coordinating the solutions. I love the term scenario that you used in your introduction. We have the people who know what to do. We have the social workers, the mental health counselors, the experts in early childhood and early childhood education. We have the people who know what to do. The problem is our government does more to fund the problem creators in this country than it does to fund the problem solvers. Because the problem solvers represent humanitarian interests as opposed to corporate interests. Therefore, there's no money, and it is money that runs Washington. So I wanted to talk about this. I continue to talk about it because voters understand. I've talked about the fact that our national security agenda is not based on any agenda for ever having peace on this earth. It's dominated by what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. With short-term profits for defense contractors more than it has to do with the humanitarian efforts involved in actual creation. So I've talked about the establishment of a Department of Peace, Peace Academy, as well as a military academy. There are serious factors involved in peace creation, that when you expand educational opportunities for children and economic opportunities for women, and when you reduce violence against women, and when you ameliorate unnecessary human suffering, that those things statistically indicate that there will be a low incidence of violence and a higher incidence of peace. Desperate people do desperate things. We should look at large groups of desperate people and consider that a national security risk. So when I talk to the voters, they hear that. They're not stupid. Voters are very intelligent. This is one of the big differences I have with the political establishment. I don't think voters are dumb. I think they're intelligent. And I have worked with people 35 years up close and personal where they have real serious problems in their lives. And what we all know, you know it, I know it, we all know it. Sometimes when you hear the bad news, it's when you get the most intelligent because all the stupid things that we allow to dominate our consciousness fall away and we really focus. And to talk about health and wellness of our health insurance, I want to talk about it. I have talked about the fact in our health care system, everybody's talking about how we're going to pay for health care. We also need to ask why are so many Americans sick? why are so many Americans dealing with chronic illnesses at such a higher level than, let's say, other comparable democracies? Well, it's because of the carcinogens in our food, the contaminants in our water, the toxins in our air. Why? Because of food companies and chemical companies and agribusiness and oil and gas and all of those things, all of those corporate entities, which form the matrix of corporate tyranny. We have a government that does more to advocate for short-term profits for health insurance companies and big pharmaceutical companies and gun manufacturers and banks and oil and gas and chemical and defense contractors than it does to advocate for our health and for our safety and for the health and safety of our children and the health and safety of our planet. And the people who created the narrative about me and the witch burning and all that ridiculousness about me, it's not because they thought I was silly. It's because they realize how serious I am.
And you know, so my that's really true. Thank you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
That people have bought it so easily. People who think of themselves as serious people who so bought that, like, wow. And in my whole health plan, I've wanted to talk to voters about the fact that that we need to underline forces that cause so much sickness, and we need a health care plan, and mine is a universal health care plan, but it incentivizes wellness. For instance, there are so many cases where we know we have scientific substantiation of the fact that where there are dietary changes and lifestyle changes, there are healing remedies that even reverse disease at a rate that is every bit as efficacious as pharmaceutical and surgical options. So in my health care plan, as part of a patient's bill of rights, anybody diagnosed by a doctor and then given a prescription of a surgical or pharmaceutical option is also informed, scientifically established remedies in the dietary or lifestyle field that have comparable results, and your insurance has to pay those as well. So all of these things, Steve, plus reparations, plus talking about real racial issues, real issues with Native Americans, I stayed in because America, if America is going to fold, all the things that you said in introducing, there are millions of us who get, this is a critical moment. And for us to think that the political establishment that drove us into this ditch, that they are the only people qualified to drive us out of this ditch, none of us would allow ourselves to be fooled like this in our personal lives. No one listening would allow ourselves to be played like this in our personal lives. And yet, like Stepford citizens. So what went on here is quite something. It really is quite something.
Well, good. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Marianne Williamson right after this break. Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki.
With the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Steve Behrman, I'm back with Marianne Williamson. Marianne, as I listen to you describe our political new word, situation, I'm reminded of two Swami quotes. The first one is, I am proposing a sane world. I must be crazy. And the other one is, the truth shall upset you free. And so, you know, I really appreciated your discourse on where we are and what we're up against, this barrier that's been put between people that want to speak the truth, that want to address the real problems, and this media fog, the political industrial complex, as you've referred to it. And I've noticed something else very different, that you have appeared on Fox. I also noticed that American Conservative Magazine gave you a fairly positive review. So why is that? What is it that conservatives recognize in your message that allows them to have that view across these ideological lines?
The conservative, most of them, to the Democratic nations. There's no reason to think they would have remained alive if I actually won the nomination. There is truth to the fact that there was a response to the more argument that I have been giving, that many people on the left see, it's the issue of rational versus non-rational. Spirituality and morality are non-rational. They're not irrational, because as in the Course in Miracles, love restores reason and not the other way around. But many people on the left, and this has been painful for me because I am a lefty, many people on the left hear anything, and this has only been in the last few decades, but they hear anything that is not linear, that is not rationalistic, and they think it's crazy talk. They think it's like Donald Trump, and so they see it as dangerous. Now, the truth of the matter is, in the 21st century, it is a different mindset than the 20th. The 20th is a very mechanistic, linear mindset, but it is not the 20th century anymore. And our political establishment is stuck in that 20th century mindset. The 21st century mindset is not always linear. It includes many more dimensions. It acknowledges and recognizes the psychological and emotional imperatives that drive people's behavior. And given Donald Trump is, by the way, I think only nonlinear politics is going to be able to override what that man will be bringing next year. But many people on the establishment left, and they're not real progressive because there's no real intellectual open-mindedness within some of those forces, are not open to a more expanded conversation of what's happening on this planet. So some conservatives, oddly enough, are. It's so strange. Now, their clues about what we do about it are very different than mine because I'm a lefty. What's so ironic about all of this? But, you know, they've said for a long time that the left is a circular firing squad. It's very disappointing to me because I thought that the politics of personal destruction was something that we didn't do, and I've learned that a lot.
We know it certainly seems as if what we've had is an abuser party and an enabler party, and the Republican Party has carried the banner of exploitation, extraction, and I would use the word heartlessness because that's really what it is, and we've there's that heart and soul. That's sacred, I feel, and I know you do too, that's been missing from the center of our politics. And so that's how the power of money has become so formidable. And we kind of accept it, ever since, Milton Friedman and, talking about the purpose of the only purpose of corporations is to make money and generate profit and so on. And we've kind of bought that as a tenet of capitalism when it might not be the case. So you're kind of you're challenging the both the scientific materialist dispirited godless left, which is very different, of course, from the civil rights movement, where they were in churches and they sang songs and spirituals, and it was spiritually and raising the energy. And then on the other hand, you have this obsolete patriarchal religion represented by the people who cling to Trump as their patriarchal king. How do we break this? You're doing it through your campaign. But how can we create an actual movement that actually breaks all of this information through the soundless barrier so that the people who are ready for this new paradigm can find one another and gather in a coherent way?
Well, so what you said speaks to exactly what's happening. So let's go back and deconstruct a lot of what you said. The Republicans don't walk their talk, but the Democrats don't talk their walk. So when you talk about the view, when you talk about the abuser and the enabler, you're absolutely right. The Republicans have been not, by the way, conversation. It's not every Republican and not every Democrat, but there are forces within the Republican Party that have been like the father whipping the child. But there have been forces in the Democratic Party been like the mother standing in the hall, wringing her hands, talking about how terrible it is, but not calling the police.
Wow.
And when and in those cases, the child grows up and their first processing of anger is towards the mother who allowed it to happen. And Democrats allowed it to happen because in the 1990s, and Bill Clinton, you know, the Democratic Leadership Council, in the 90s, the whole idea was we play with big boys in business. So in the 1990s, the Democrats started being as beholden to money as the Republicans were. So before that, you really, when I was growing up, the Democratic Party was the party of the people. Starting in the 90s, they tried to have it both ways. But there comes a point in which you kind of can't have it both ways. So once the Democratic Party became as infected by the undue influence of money, then it was an entire corporatist establishment, which has its headquarters in the Democratic Party, just like it practically completely co-opted the Republican Party. I mean, if you look at the bill that was passed the other day in the House, $738 billion. Defense bill that actually continues the National Defense Authorization Act. If anything, gives the president even more power to participate in this genocidal war with Saudi Arabia against Yemen for the same $360 billion arms deal, which does nothing to limit the president's power should he decide to take action against Iran, and which establishes a branch of the U.S. military by which we will full militarize space. I remind you, Steve, that was passed by a Democratic House of Representatives. So we have a problem here. Now, you said, what can we do? I'll tell you what we could do. Support me for president. You have a presidential candidate who is saying all this. You have a presidential candidate who is acknowledging all this. You have a presidential candidate who gets all this. You have a presidential candidate who the establishment forces realize is dangerous to them. And yet, yeah. Steve, look at, of course they say I'm dangerous. I'm dangerous to them. I'm naming it. All the things that you say, but to name these things within the context of presidential candidacy. And yet, look at the various forces of resistance. I understand why the political system says, whoa, and have her. But think of how many people absolutely agree with everything you and I have said, and they're saying either we can't have her or whatever their reason is for not supporting. I think a lot of it's been, you know, just like there's unconscious racism and there's unconscious anti-Semitism, there's unconscious misogyny. There's a lot of faux feminism out there. And there are a lot of people who I think in the final analysis, they're mocking her. So if I say anything nice about her, maybe they'll mock me too. It's, you know, Martin Luther King said that in the final analysis, you will remember the silence of your friends more than the words of your enemies. I've been shocked, Steve, how many of the people that I thought, because I know that Chair, you and I have sat here, would have been helpful. And I'm having to burn through a lot of and really process a lot of this myself to understand what happened here.
Well, you know, that's exactly the case. You know, ironically, the people on the conservative right were much more courageous in supporting this outsider and outlier, Donald Trump.
Yeah,
and
that is, yes, that is so interesting that you say that. The Republicans don't defer to the RNC the way the Democrats defer to the DNC, like there's some higher frickin' wisdom. The Republicans look at the RNC and go, oh, you know, they're our administrative ones. They work for us. So when the RNC said your choices are Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, or Ted Cruz, they said, no, we want Donald Trump. But in the DNC, with this reality TV show of narrowing the field with the debates, which all of this debate stuff is a reality TV show. The primary, all that's supposed to be narrowing the field are the voters in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada. That's what primaries are for. So, but the Democrats are like, oh, well, she's not on the debate stage. Don't they? People don't understand that. That's exactly what they want you to think. Ooh, she's not on the debate stage, so I can't take her seriously. When they purposely do the things to keep people off the debate stage that aren't in their club.
You know,
or
I was
in some way someone they consider serious.
I was a bad boy. Several years ago, I wrote a piece about Fox News called "Come On, Baby, Fight My Liar." You know, talking about how Fox News just lies on, that lies on a consistent basis. And my conclusion was, obviously, conservatives like being lied to, whereas progressives prefer lying to themselves. And that kind of got me in trouble. And part
You're right,
of that,
though.
Yeah, I'm sad
right.
to say.
You are really right. You are really right.
And here are people who think of themselves as intellectually superior. So it just takes a more sophisticated scam to hoodwink them.
You are so right. You are so right. And let me tell you something. I knew you were right before, but with what I've been through the last year,
yeah.
You are so right. You are so right.
Here's a perfect example. And I'm not going to pull you into this. I'm simply going to say it for myself. The vaccination issue. And how they piled on you for even raising a little peep of a question about that. I got booed off of stage at a progressive event by suggesting that maybe the drug companies were covering up some things in relation to vaccinations and that they weren't completely safe, and that I just got slammed by people that I thought, oh, they're on my side or I'm on their side.
Right.
So there is
a. You can't even say there should be more independent investigation without being called anti-vax. And you say, no, I'm not anti-vax. I'm for safety in vax. And they go, no, what anti-vax say. So you can't even say, you could say, I'm against the Iraq war. No, you're not. You're not. It's insane. Meanwhile, the I mean, first of all, we had the opioid crisis. So we know there are attorneys general all over the country who are prosecuting, even now, pharmaceutical company executives for no predatory practices regarding OxyContin and opioids. But if you even begin to say anything about anything, whether it's antidepressants, whether it's vaccines, any kind of questioning about the role of big pharma in the, you are touching such a sacred cow, as and people do not realize the amount of money that big pharma spends. Last year alone, big pharmaceutical companies lobbied Congress to lobby Congress to the tune of $284 million. And yep. The Democratic Party is so tied in with that. Like you said, Steve, people who think of themselves as so intellectually honest, who it's a real anti-intellectualism. There is some anti-intellectualism on the left. Like, as you said so well, think of themselves as so not too cool to be played, too smart to be played. Well, you can be very smart and still think and behave very foolishly.
Okay, Marianne, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with our final segment after this little break with Marianne Williamson, who I say will be and should be our next president.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Okay, well, we're back with Marianne Williamson, and we're looking at a dilemma, if not a predicament, and that is that the American people, and I've traveled across the country and I've had conversations with people left, right, and center, and people all agree that we've been divided into these two political tribes that focus on divisive issues primarily, so that the American people don't actually get together in this sane and sacred center to stand for the values that this country is based on. And one of the things that you bring to the conversation that's been kind of neglected, we've kind of left it to the right wing to talk about the founding fathers and all of this stuff. You've got a very deep understanding of that. And also the necessity of bringing we the people into the conversation. So I'm looking at your campaign as a flagship for what we're going to need to do for a long, long time. And, you know, it takes a while sometimes for something to gain traction, particularly when the established system is spending every penny that they have to make sure that your message is distorted and doesn't get heard. So how do we continue to build what I would call an ecosystem for civic engagement as we that simultaneously creates the realization, you know what, this person's candidacy is for real. We could actually vote for her. We can actually have a change. How do you see this this conversation moving forward in the next, not just the next year, but really in the next decade?
Well, you know, you had mentioned before about how Trump supporters just voted for Trump because they wanted Trump. And we were starting to talk about how many people on the left, people who are Democrats, I can't tell you how many people said, I would love to vote for Marianne, but she's not electable. All this, she's not electable stuff. Well, if everybody who said that had voted for me, we'd be in a different situation or felt they could vote for me. So the answer to your question, as I said before, one of the things you do is you run someone for president who actually speaks these things. Now, if for those who say, yeah, then it's called, you know, going to Marianne2020.com and giving a donation, because when all of these things happened with these narratives, then the money dried up in really big ways. Beyond that, that really is the issue. You have to run people for office who are saying these things. Otherwise, it's just theater at this point. We've had the protests. We've had the, when everybody's in Washington now on Friday with Jane Fonda and the climate issue, all of which is true, all of which I support. We need a World War II level mass mobilization to avoid climate change. We have 7 years to do it. If we don't do it within 7 years, we could have a level of massive collapse within 20 years, unlike anything we've seen in the modern era. We could see whole swaths of countries and continents that are uninhabitable because of the heat. If that happens, obviously food cannot be grown there. You're talking about massive shortages, economic collapse, and possibly hundreds of millions of climate refugees. This would all be a catastrophe beyond anything our current infrastructure of Western civilization the capacity to handle. Now, enough of us get this, but why are you in Washington protesting outside instead of supporting, using that same energy to support candidates who would actually put someone at the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, for instance, who is a world-class environmentalist, who actually will make the Green New Deal happen and so forth. So, right, in which we're stuck at this expression of power that is still lacking in commitment to electoral politics. And it's when you're actually in office is when you have the levers of power. You know, I hear so many people that in terms of my own candidacy, we want you to advise someone. That if ever there is a naive statement, it's thinking that advising the president is going to make a difference. I have advised presidents. You advise, you go to Camp David, you might even have a night in the Lincoln bedroom. I've been there, done that. Advising, you're having dinner, you're having a meeting. Meanwhile, these corporate lobbyists are spending billions of dollars every single day. We all really need to wake up, Steve. So what we need to do is realize that, you know, or sometimes what people say about my candidacy, she's elevating the conversation. How much time do you think we have? Even like when you've talked about the future, how much time do people think we have? So the answer to the question, from my perspective, in terms of what you said, has to do with running for office. We need people to run for office in these things. And one of the things that I thought was a unique opportunity about this candidacy was the fact that we had a presidential platform. And you know, I'm sorry that we were not able to remain in the debates. I'm sorry there has not been more support, the kind of which would enable us to even speak it louder and with more power.
Well, right now you're in Iowa. You've moved to Iowa. You established yourself there because that's a key state at the beginning of the, of the primary system. Obviously, your campaign is way, way, way more grassroots in that you're in there. and you're actually engaging with voters and connecting with voters. How do you see the that? Because that's really what the strategy is right now. That's where you are. How have you seen that working over the past several months, being on the ground and actually being able to break through to convince voters, yes, you need to vote for the candidate who actually is representing what you truly want. You need to have the personal courage and commitment to do that. How has that aspect of the campaign gone?
Well, the problem is how many people, number one, won't even come hear you because of that contempt prior to investigation. And number two, a lot of people, I mean, I've had people, so many people apologize to me, say, I thought you were someone so different. I came here to laugh at you. I'm sorry, you're so not what I thought you were. Because everybody's been so sold this wacky crystal lady, you know, crap. So it's been very difficult. Also, what's happened in a way that's really unfortunate is that even people in these states have been so almost trained to think that the drama promulgated by the DNC and the campaign industrial complex is what determines who's electable. Once again, as we were talking before, Republicans refer to the RNC like that. So it's difficult without the name recognition and with the propaganda. It's tough, but I would like to stay in because when I do get to talk about these things, and more, I think the campaign industrial complex starts all this early, but the actual voters in these primary states, just like people had told me, it's true, they don't really start focusing on this until like after Thanksgiving. So I do believe just now, I mean, I'm talking to people, people get it, but it's a matter of, whether you have the money to stay in. We're now talking, this is a multi-billion dollar business here. I mean, Michael Bloomberg, for instance, he spent $40 million on TV ads in 1 week.
Yeah,
And by the way, I have a lot to say about that when this is all over, because the airwaves belong to the American people. Airwaves belong to the American people, and none of this should be legal. What we should have is that every serious political candidate should have the same amount of time that is granted, and then that's it. This whole thing is a reality TV show. They talk about Donald Trump being a reality TV star. On the left, this is just as much reality TV as on the right.
Yes, with not much regard for reality, as you pointed out, in regards to the real crisis. Here's a bit of perspective. And 20 years ago, it was 20 years ago that Ralph Nader ran for president, and he was challenging the very things that you're talking about 20 years ago. This was right after the trade agreements and the protests in Seattle, and he represented something that was really looking at the two-party system, both parties being party to this economic exploitation and injustice and so on. And, of course, he got blamed for Al Gore losing and so on. But what didn't happen, or what could have happened and what didn't happen, was that he did not spark an independent political movement so that people could build this up over time. You've jumped in out of necessity. Because as the Swami would say, now is the time because it's too late to do it sooner. You jumped in based on a necessity and a direness of our situation. But what if for the past 20 years or 8 years or 4 years, there had been a movement where people are recognizing that, you know what, we don't have to settle for one of these two Tweedledee, Tweedledum candidates, that there can be actually something that something new and different. It requires a movement, and whatever happens with your candidacy, you're bringing together that movement that will either make it now, but will eventually make it if we are to make it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, Well, I do, but this gets really complicated. When I ran for Congress, I ran as an independent. And I found, found out the hard way how naive that was. Because the Democrats and the Republicans have really shown up a lot. You know, if you look at our history, third-party voices have been very important. Abolition came from the Abolitionist Party. Women's suffrage came from the suffragette. Vice movement came from, Social Security came from the Socialist Party. So in the past, third-party voices were very important. Right now, it's so sewn up. Now, in my case, even right now, I would never run as an independent or as a third party because we know the effect that Jill Stein had on the last election. And with Donald Trump as president, I wouldn't do anything to lure 10 votes away from the Democrats next year.
Sure. I totally understand that. Yeah.
The same with the Republicans, like two broken legs and two broken arms, but the Trump agenda is like a bullet near the heart. This is what's going to happen. The Republican Party needs it sold back. The Democratic Party needs it sold back. We've got to break the corporatist machine. The problem we have in this country is we have a corporate aristocracy that has corrupted our government and has hijacked our value system. But if you look at something like the DNC and all of that kind of corporatist leadership, that's just a corporate elite within a corporate elite. But we're supposed to think they're going to lead us in this great advocacy against the tyranny of the corporate elite. It doesn't make any sense. God forbid, but if he does, there will be an explosion within the Democratic Party. And that will have been two times the purchase forces within the Democratic Party led to catastrophe. And if that happens again, God forbid, that's when I don't think it'll be about an independent movement. It will be about trying to take the Democratic Party back into alignment with the soulfulness and the heartfulness, as you said, yeah, heart and the soul back to the Democratic Party. I wish my integrity, who are just as upset about what's happened to their party.
Sure.
And conservatives have work to do, and high-minded progressives have work to do, because both of those major parties have been corrupted by a corporatism that is the problem. It cannot possibly be a conduit for the solution.
Your choice to run as a Democrat, absolutely brilliant and perfect, because you're absolutely right. We have two parties. We have the Democratic Party and the undemocratic party, and we might as well try to heal the enabler before marginalize the abuser by strengthening the enabler. When I'm talking about an independent movement, I'm not talking about a third party. I'm talking about a third force that influences the Democratic Party as a force of moving forward. And this is awakening. Yeah, go ahead.
It already exists. That's the point. It already exists. Democracy is broken. When you talk about this movement, the movement already exists. The problem is not that with the American people. The American people are fine. In issue after issue, you can see Americans are basically left of center. We're fine. Look at environment. The vast majority of people want radical action on the climate change. The vast majority of people want radical action on gun safety. The vast majority of people want radical action in all the right ways. So it's not about forming more people. It's about recognizing how our political system has been corrupted. And the enablers are us. The enablers are us to think that there's any way to influence those people other than running a different kind of character. When you talk about healing the enablers, they can go off to a spa somewhere or to rehab and take care of their my responsibility to heal them, my responsibility and your responsibility, all of us who care about, is to see that in the future they will no longer be calling the shots in the Democratic Party. Should not be calling the shots in the Democratic Party. We should be supporting candidates who are saying the things we believe in.
Well, you know what? You've actually made your case in a very, very, very clear way. And, you know, rather than being a voice out in the bewilderness, I think more and more people need to look inside themselves and go, where am I going to be on primary day? And am I going to actually support something that my heart tells me is true, or am I going to fall prey to the naysayers and the narratives that have limited us to this point? And I think you've made it very, very clear why you're in the race, why you're still in the race. And it's certainly I feel more empowered than ever to continue supporting your work and your candidacy. And as we said earlier, using the Donald Trump phenomenon, as you know, he was subject to tremendous amounts of abuse and ridicule and everything. And you know, he stayed with it. Marianne Williamson, I'm so happy to have had you on my Wiki Politiki show today. I wish you the best, and hopefully, as people listen to this interview, they'll go, you know what? I'm with her because she's with me. Thank you so much, Marianne, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you.